It's not an easy topic for me to speak about. I myself, as probably some of the older people in the room, were children of survivors. My father's Zechein Evracha was quite an older man when the war hit. He lost wife and children and came out of everything else. My mother, Tibor Al-Chaim Toim Aruchim, was younger. And I still, until not so long ago, saw myself on the receiving end of needing to listen, to ask, to hear, and so on. It dawned on me that the burden is passed on to us, and it's a very heavy burden. The old song of who's going to be my children's Zaidi if not for me. But there's one terrible shortcoming that I and my generation have, and that is, who are we to talk? Anything we say. My parents came with the credentials of having been there, and I'm not talking about historical credentials. We have historians, and they've searched and are searching and so on. I'm talking about the emotional, personal credentials to talk about it in any way. And one would instinctively want to shy away and not speak about it. It's everything, just talking about something like that feels like you're desecrating something. I guess we don't have that luxury, and you, who many of you are going to be mechanchos of the next generation, and even if you're not in formal chinuch, Be'ez Hashem, you'll have children, and this is going to be an important part of the history that you're going to teach your children. And the Gemara says about an Amora made a statement, and he said, Olim Omro, Olim Lo Omro. Woe unto me if I say it, woe unto me if I don't say it. If you're not sensitive, you won't have any problems. You can tell the stories, you can not tell the stories. But if somebody is a balas nefesh, somebody has some sensitivity, you're going to have a lot of difficulty in communicating it. So I guess if I can give a caption to it, I would say, Shal no lecha mal reglecha, ki amokam ashat oimer alav kadeshu. We're entering ground that is hallowed, and we need to make that circle. I want to first explain, when the time comes to communicate, what's the circle we need to make. There's a Rambam, in Mor Nevuchim, it's the second perek, very much at the beginning. Someone asked the Rambam a question that the Rambam considers one of the fundamental questions in Emunah. And the question deals with how was it that Bechira was given to Adam HaRishon after he sinned. If Bechira is the crown of human ability, and in many ways it's the area that is most divine-like, how could that have been given to him after the Chet? That's the question. And the Rambam says, Hikshali ish chacham ze loishanim kushik dola. Ze loishanim kushik dola. A wise man asked me a question that he's been wrestling with for many years. Sorech lehizbonin bekushya. You need to think hard about the question, ubitshuvaseinu bepiruka, and our answer in dealing with it. Now, there's a short little hack. He brings the question, and then he starts the answer. And listen to how he addresses the person. Ushmanya nechuvaseinu. Listen. Omarnu. We told him. Ato ha'ish. You. Hama'ayim betchilas rayoinov uzmamov. who's just beginning to think, and he thinks he understands a sefer, which is the foundation of wisdom for the early ones and the later ones. When he had some odd moments from eating, drinking, family life, he looked into it. As if he'd be reading a novel or sing a song. Sit and think. It's not the way you thought at first glance. Now, the Rambam starts and says, this is a wise man, and the question is a very powerful question. And the Rambam makes it the first question he deals with in Mor Nevuchim. And the Rambam addresses the person in the way we just read now. And I think what the Rambam is saying is there are questions that are mechanical questions. How much is 2 and 2 can be air standing or 1 foot dancing? Even if it's a tough problem, you need to sit down. But there's no required setting for a question that has no real, it comes with no real content to it. He said, you're dealing with a fundamental question here in Ikrei HaTorah, and your attitude requires a sense that you're dealing with Kodesh. It has to do not, the question is a very good question and a very significant question. But the attitude of a person asking it, the Rambam finds wanting. And I think to tell stories about the Shoah in anything but a special setting and an understanding that it needs its setting, its mood, its time is very important. So the first thing I would like to lay down is the understanding that this is hallowed ground and requires the attitude when we talk about it, when we tell about it, when we discuss it, and we need to find the time, whether it's a school setting, community setting, personal family setting. You need to give it the chshivas that it is, that it has. We need to stay within 2 parameters. And I think that is probably the toughest of the issues. On the one hand, to talk about it in a context that's divorced from Tanakh is calling in question our belief in Tanakh. To talk about other people with a haughtiness and a certain smugness about what they did, what they didn't do, calls into question our being a human being, our sensitivity, our understanding of who we are and who we would be if we were faced with other circumstances. There's a parasha, and the reason, and I'll explain why I feel comfortable, or the word's not comfortable, but I feel entitled to use this as the guideline for one direction of this conversation. This was my father's Chayin Vracha was in Kovna Ghetto with a gadol, a tremendous gadol named Reb Motel Pergamansky. We'll be quoting something from him later on. And he would say shmuzen. Reb Motel Pergamansky was the crown of the yeshiva world in Europe. He passed through he was a Baal Tshuva actually, fascinating story. His biography just came out in Hebrew. He was a figure in our house in terms of the stories. He lived in my father's house many times. He was those people who learned the Tells know, those people in Slabotka know. He was a crown jewel of the yeshiva world. He was an older person. And he would say shmuzen in the ghetto, in Kovna Ghetto. And his overall framework for the shmuzen were Psukim in Yecheskel. And he would say, and I'm quoting him, I'm not talking, I'm quoting him. He says, he would say, I don't hear the clacking of the German boots. I don't see Nazis around. I see Psukim of Tanakh coming to life. And the pasuk says, "V'ha'oyle al ruchachem." The Navi Yecheskel telling Klal Yisrael, that which you've entertained, "Hoya loisia," it won't come to being. Asha atem oimrim nia kagoyim kemishpray sarotzis. You want to become like the nations around you. You want to assimilate in and become part of them. Chayoni ne'um Hashem alakim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu swears, Imloi biyat chazoka ubezroi netuya ubechei meshfucha emlech aleihem. I will be your melech. Hopefully because you crown me as a melech. And if not, I will do what it takes to do to retain Klal Yisrael as the Am Hashem. That's, if there's any theme, so to speak, from Chumash, whether the Teichachon Vayikra, and the Teichachon Dvarim, and every Navi, Vayasu Yisrael Rabbein Hashem Vayishlach Es, then Vayishlach Shmuel Loishiyam, David Loishiyam, on and on and on. There is one Yad of Hashkacha, and that is every time there's a threat that we would stop being a Kaddish Baruch Hu pulls us back, no matter what it takes. Let me give you a vivid mashal. When someone's child is drifting away, so we try to bring back with love, with embrace. Sometimes when somebody's on a chart, on course, to do something terrible, we'll intervene in the roughest of ways. And that's because we don't want to lose a child. These events are events of HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying that he's going to be Moilech on us, Biyat Chazaka. On the other hand, there's a Gemara, Maisa Bar Mechad, Gemara Megillah, Shayekoyre Lamaila Rebeleza, Hoydes Yerushalayim Estavaseha. He was reading the parsha, the also in Yecheskel, go tell Yerushalayim all of the abominations they do. Amaloi, so Abiyazah said, Ad shata boidek betoivos Yerushalayim, before you start criticizing the toivos of Yerushalayim, tsei bedok betoivos imecha, bot kachrov umotz v'shem es pasul. And he found he himself had his share of issues. To go and to speak about details, specifics, that's not where we go. It's not us, and we can't say anything about it. What we can say is that we, going forward, need to do what it takes to be oiches in the bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do what it takes to bring us back. And not only us sitting in this room, but we also have a responsibility for every person that B'Shem Yisrael Yikra. Anyone who's Jewish is our responsibility, not theirs. They don't know. They don't understand. We know. We understand. And we're responsible. If a little child runs into the street, the little child is not the guilty party. It's the older brother who's standing there and doesn't do anything. So the achrayus on us is, one, to understand this as part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's big bris, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise to us that we'll never, ever drift away. And that's the worst thing I can have to call Yisrael, is to break the grip of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and drift off. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it won't happen. Hopefully, a kind grasp, an embrace will do it. And if not, I'll do whatever it takes. That is as far as we need, can, are allowed to go. We need never to understand, chas v'sholom, to understand it out of the context of Tanakh, and chas v'sholom that we should make ourselves. And I always, when somebody says something on this sort that that is off. I always think of the Rambam, this person, Baruch Hashem, had three square meals. Now he sits down and he's telling exactly what happened. We don't understand the nesionos of those generations. We don't understand the problems. We don't understand it. It's not relevant to us. The only thing that's relevant to us is going forward, we have an achrayus to be machzik in the bris of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we should tighten the grip instead of chas v'shalom waiting for the other to happen. What type of words? What type of stories? The Gemara says in many places that chayev adam leima dava b'shem rabbi. A person needs to say things with his Rebbe's lashon, in the words that his Rebbe used, and the way he said them. You can't go wrong if you say the words and teach them properly, because they're his words. I selected a few items that were said by Gdoli Yisrael, who lived there, were in it, while they were in it. And I want to focus on what things I picked out to speak about the physical horrors. It's important to read about it. But the truth is, those are things that they passed. We need to look at it and, as much as is possible, to have some sort of nosa be'ol, to feel what it was like. But I don't think that that's quite the nekuda. There's a genre of stories and sayings that are pure emuna and gevura, and they're important, but somehow they don't seem lifelike. We can't sit in those shoes. People are giants, and someone could just be oblivious under social circumstances. It's important that there were things like that, there were people like that. It's still not having the type of nesias ol to be able to feel and to resonate. What I tried to pick out were big people whose emuna came within the context of a difficult emotional struggle. The physical pain passes. The emotional struggle. When we talk about emuna, we're not talking about a cheshbon. Yes, Hashem, not Hashem, this reason, that reason, other reason. Wrong vocabulary, wrong methodology. We're talking about a person who struggles with his neshama and his emotions. And to see emuna expressed through those words of people, an emuna expressed within the context of an emotional struggle, are words we can use in the right setting and the right time and give over a sense of a child where he'll understand some of the yisuri nefesh, some of the real gvura. When somebody's oblivious to something, somebody has no pain sensation, and you stick a pin and it doesn't say anything, it's not a gevura, he didn't have. So there's, it could be a big person that he's in a different world and nothing affected him. But when a person has sensations of pain and screams and yet displays gevura, those are extraordinary moments. And those are moments that, we can identify with the tsar. It allows us to feel, to have the nesias ol with what was happening, the credible internal torture that they went through. And it's a chizik for amunah, because we don't have the luxury of being oblivious to things that happen. We live through them. And when we understand how to find things in struggle, we will be able to have something for us as well also. I've picked three big people, three gedolim, one of whom survived the war and rebuilt, one of whom survived the war and was nifta a few years, 2-3 years afterwards, and he rebuilt in a small way, and one of whom was killed in the war but kept the diary with Chidush HaTorah and so on. The three people are, two of the three I have a personal connection to, and one not. One is, I told Reb Motl Pogromansky. Reb Motl Pogromansky was a Baal Tshuva before they invented them. He was a phenomenal genius who grew up in Litter, not a from home. Reb Elia Lopian, as a young, grabbed him as a young boy. Reb Elia Lopian went around to be Mechazik people, you know, after World War I. He became a Talmud of Tells and was considered on par with the Rosh Yeshivas there. He then moved to Slabodka and spent most of the time, and he would say occasional shurim and shmuzen. I don't want to take the time, but he was from the great stars. He made it through the war in incredible ways and survived a few years afterwards, where he helped establish in Paris for a lot of the refugees yeshivas. And then he died of cancer, and that was Reb Motl Pogromansky. The second person, and that was my father. He was my father's home a lot. My father supplied him with things. That's a household name in our family. Kloisenberger Rebbe survived the war, rebuilt and established. My father was with him in the DP camps. He was close with him. And my father did a lot of things, and you know, certain things he needed taken care of. My father was very close with him, and that's the second person. Third person was one of the upcoming great rebbes in Europe, the Piasatzna. He himself was incredibly ahead of his times. He realized how the chinuch is, the chassidish world is disintegrating. He made yeshivas, structured yeshivas. He wrote sfarim that have become in the chassidish world classics for young talmidim, giving them hadracha and chizuk. He writes in his Akdamas things that you would think were written today. I mean, he writes, everybody prides themselves, they were working on the yeshiva, Beis Medrash. He said, look out the window. Look where everybody is. What are you proud of a Beis Medrash when you have 10,000 people outside? You're not giving the young door pride and so on. An extraordinary person, just extraordinary. He suffered through it. He was caught up in the war. His family was slowly killed off. He had one son, his pride and joy, who was a big Talmud Chacham and a big Kaddish, and he was killed 1 or 2 years before, and he was very broken from it. And he wrote a sefer that he kept, Shmuzen, that he said in the ghetto, Torah. He made it through 3 years, and it ends with that. I want to learn through some excerpts. This is the Torah of the only people that have the right to learn the sugya, the terrible sugya of the war. These and those type of people, the people who were osek in the sugya and felt the sugya and lived the sugya and gave us over the very Torah of that era. I have there are copies of the things I'm using, and I left them here, and if anybody wants to make use of it, feel free afterwards to take sheets, or I left some blanks. You could run more for whatever as you wish. I want to read over. This is from Lapid HaEsh. This is from about the Kloisenberger Rebbe. I believe it's been translated in English. All the three Sfarim I used were in Hebrew. They're really written by people who were close. The stories are authentic. They were checked and rechecked. It's something that a lot of work and effort went into all three, certainly the one that was written himself by the Piasatzna. He describes the Kloisenberger, they describe the first Tish. After incredible stories about the Kloisenberger Rebbe's Shmiras HaMitzvahs and Diktuk HaMitzvahs during the war years. The first Shabbos after liberation, they were still in the camp. He made Kiddush on bread, there was no wine. He only ate potatoes because everything else he had chalice with the kashrus. He started speaking Divrei Torah, and he expressed a tremendous tzar. He said, this is not how I thought it would end. Did I think it would end with the Germans giving up? He said, I was expecting that there wouldn't be one blade of grass left in this cursed land. He said, were we waiting for American soldiers? We were waiting for Shiftei Kah. he expressed the sense, he understood that there are tkufis in Klal Yisrael that will come with tremendous, tremendous yisurim. And the yisurim weren't alien to him. But there was a disappointment that the yisurim hadn't given birth to a new rejuvenation of Klal Yisrael and in Sakan El Malchus Shakai. They have here two or three stories about the Rebbe understood the people went through it, understood how much stress and strain, and how he wasn't going to preach to them. And he says, the Rebbe, he said, never demanded of anyone anything in Torah and in mitzvahs. He would slowly deal with them as people. He said, one of the survivors, who was not from, wrote, he said, until the last day of the camps, I believed there would be Geula. And when it didn't come, I left. And I became not from. He said, when I got to the DP camp, I met the Rebbe. And the Rebbe understood my angst and what was going through my mind and heart. He didn't give me Musa. He asked one thing, spend Yom Nerayim with me and eat with me. And I went in Erev Yom Kippur for a bracha, and he said, stay the way you are, don't worry. Someone else came to the Rebbe, and he said that, it says over here, he said that I don't want to become part of your community because I won't be able to go see movies. And the Rebbe told him, as soon as there's a movie theater and movies, I will buy you the ticket. And kach have. And he, until the person gradually came to his senses and became an al-chayit. Only a person who lived through it and understood it, understood where the other person was, could understand how to deal with it. Was he interested in having this other person remain an apikoros? No. But this was not the time and place to preach emuna and mitzvahs. It was a time and place to bring somebody back. One. Two. I'd like to some quotes on B'Yisatzin. There's more than I'm going to read. We don't have that much time. But I want to read three pieces, three things. One is, it's a sefer called Eish Kodesh. It's quite available. He says, when they brought his child in dead, his son, it wasn't a child, it was a grown-up son who was an Adam Chashev, and this was his pride and joy. This is what he had lived for. He was building a chassidus that would reinvigorate the Yiddish world with ruach and neshama, and his son would be the one to take over. He was wounded in the bombings, and then he was nifta on Sukkot. They brought him in, he didn't cry. Motzei Shabbos, he started crying, and he said, I have lost the war. My war is over. I'm finished. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help that Klal Yisrael should survive. He didn't, his war was over. And he said, and now the only thing I can think of is that someone else survive to relight that fire again. He writes, the last piece was ironically Shabbos Chazon. And he speaks about the concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, the word chazon, chazoi means to see, to look. And he speaks about the inyan of ra'oi ra'isi ba'ani ami. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I now have seen the suffering of my people. And the Rebbe is medayik, that there's a word yediyah, which means to know, and there's a word re'iyah, which is to see. By us, there's a difference. Some things we know about, some things we see. By Kaddish Baruch Hu, there's obviously no difference. It's one and the same. So he explains that Yediyah and Re'iyah are two ways in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to events in Klal Yisrael. Yadati and Ra'isi. And he explains it with a mashal. And this is the last divrei Torah that we have of his. He says, V'zeh ro'oi ro'isi ba'onei am yashem Mitzrayim ki yadati yasmach oivav. He says, I've seen the suffering because I do know what's hurting them. So he says, it's hard to understand what it means, ro'oi ro'isi ki yadati. I've seen it because I know. So he says, aval yesh she'av yodea she'tov v'gdolo lebno l'aso nituach. He says, a father can be aware of the fact that a child needs a very difficult medical treatment. He knows that, and he's instrumental in getting his child for the treatment. He says, "Umekol makom lo yuchal lamod v'lirois b'shoas she'oisin la'nituach kanal." But the same father who got money together and got the best doctor and sent him for the operation won't be able to stand and look at it. He says, "Ve'av she'letoyve hiloi." And even though he knows that it's the right thing and it's good, mikol makom l'roisam l'yuchal, to look at it he can't. Why? Because butla hayedia asher yodeo shalavasehi v'rak b'surim u'margish. When a person has to have that immediacy of seeing it, his mind loses the understanding of how important it is for the child, and he'll do something. He'll even stop it. Because he's so caught up with the tsar that the re'iyah is mevatel the yediyah. The re'iyah cancels the yediyah. And he finishes lefty retorit Shabbos chazoin. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with the mid of re'iyah of chazoin. Halavai HaKadosh Baruch Hu should use the mid of re'iyah. So even though we know that mitzad yediyah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is necessary. But the mid of re'iyah will bring a type of rachmim that will be able to overcome it. Those are his last divrei Torah. There's one more thing that I would like to share about what he says. And almost every shtickel of his is a person has a hard time. How could he be mechazik himself? How can he mechazik himself? He obviously is talking from his own heart as well. V'yesh, sha'ish be'atzmoy tam al atzmoy. A lot of times a person wonders about himself. Halo nishbar ani. I'm a broken person. I'm always in a mood to cry. And many times I break out crying. How am I going to learn? How am I going to mechazik myself to mechadish and Torah Chassidus? And sometimes he says, you know what? Maybe it's a certain hard-heartedness that I can ignore everything and be osik and so on and so forth. So he brings a chazal. It says a Gemara in Chagiga that the Gemara asks Akasha, it says that there are two HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries, and there's a pasuk that says Ois v'chedva b'mkoymoy. So in one place it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hanhaga is always b'simcha, and one place it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu's meirid d'mos on the loss of the kavod of Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara answers, there's bate bro'i and bate gavo'i. On the outside, it looks like always oz v'chedva, whatever that means, on the outer hashgacha. On the inner hashgacha, there is b'chia. So he says, if a person pushes himself, and a person learns and is oved Hashem, even when it's difficult, then he's able to break through that outer layer and reach into the inner layer where Kavayochel HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is crying. V'zeh achilek, he says, habechiyos v'atzar, she'odom mitztaya ba'atzme levad al tzareisav. When you sit and cry alone on your tzareis, yeshe nishba v'noifel mehem acheni yochel asmuma, you become depressed and broken and helpless. But when you sob with HaKadosh Baruch Hu together, they strengthen a person. He cries and feels strengthened. he's broken and strengthens himself. Lilmod v'lavo, to continue learning and doing with Hashem. Kashu rak lisrome pam yishen v'shen yitzaris. The first two or three times is hard to lift yourself past that outer layer of oizachetva. Alokiv shemis ametz umeshet esroishay v'nogeh v'to avoda. When he struggles and overcomes that hurdle, oz nichnasu ala botek avoyish Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He enters in that inner sanctum where HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyochel is crying. V'sham boicham yalim Kaviyochel yachad. Af mischazik loyma toira v'yosipar. So he's talking with the blood drops of his own heart. And he's talking about himself. And he's saying that when a person understands, when a person is able to understand, he's not telling us there's no cause to cry. He's not telling us, he's not living in a fool's paradise. He said, I lost the war. It's over for me. But he said, there's a place in the Bria, in that Gehenim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there as well. And if we hold on and we both cry, Kaviyachol, then I can hold on to it. Those are words of the only person that I have the right to say these things. This is the Divrei Torah of Auschwitz. And this is the Rebbe of it. One more. This is from Ramat Bagamansky. These stories, there are two stories I want to say over. One of them I heard before. Again, my father was close, and we had a family friend, Admeir Vesim, still alive, he's still a man, Admeir Vesim, not a youngster by any stretch of imagination, who, Baruch Hashem, his memory is very fresh and very big bal regish. And the two stories are similar. They both happened. And Reb Motl had the same take on both of them. One of them has a knetch that it's not quite mentioned here, a small addition. I want to say over these two stories. Kovno was the capital of Lithuania between the wars, and the ghetto there lasted quite long. They liquidated the ghetto in 43, 44. And for a few years, there was a sort of a normal life, very, very, very darkistic, but there was some semblance of it. What the Germans did was, there were a few Aktsis, which means they would come and remove an entire sector of population to kill them off. Older people, younger people, and the ones that were difficult, the hardest one was the children Aktsia. He says like this, there was Erev Pesach in Tovshin Dalet, 1944. That's when the Nazis did their Kinder Aktia, and they took out every child from the ghetto and killed them, including my brother and my sister, Hashem Yikom Damo. And it was devastating. People had lived for 3 years with terrible sorrows, but they said, you know what, we'll survive, we have kids, there'll be a new generation, and this is where it'll go. It's before Pesach, and the Jews were baking matzahs. Very, very, they had to do it sort of surreptitiously in order to be mekayim the mitzvah. And then the Germans broke into the homes, grabbed all the kids, and dumped them in trucks and carted them off to kill. At the end of it, when they finished, the person telling the story, Reb Shimon Segel, should be well, and his friend, Zichron Livracha, Meir Lampert, they walked out. And they saw families and parents that took all the tashmish kedusha they had with the matzahs that endangered themselves to bake and threw it out the window. We saw sifrei kodesh, sidurim, chumashim, and gemaras thrown out. We saw the matzahs that they acquired from Siris Nefesh for Pesach broken and tossed like garbage. We were devastated. And we came to Reb Motl totally overwhelmed from what we saw. Reb Motl said, tell me what you saw. He was very shaken, and he thought a minute. And then he said, you know, he said, this is real Amuna. Because when a kid is walking with his father, and he asks for something, and the father says no, and the kid starts hitting and biting and kicking, it's because the child knows that the father has the ability to do something. The anger and the rage is directed because you know that he did it. And in that terrible, terrible loss of Emunah, he saw Emunah. This is a section of real life. People were destroyed. Many were rebuilt afterwards. But how could they not be destroyed? And yet, somebody who is a giant could see the nekuda of Emunah that's there. There's a similar story, and I think in an audience of future mothers, it's an extraordinary story. And that will be... It was a very similar story, and I know both to be true. Again, I know this is an almost personal knowledge. He said, they once took children away on Erev Shabbos. It wasn't in this tkufa. The Pesach Aktzia was in the middle of the week. It was a Monday, Tuesday, or sometime. And they grabbed a child from a father. And he came home, and he saw his wife lighting licht. And he took the licht and smashed him. And he said, it's not the time to light licht anymore. And she stood there petrified. And she gathered up the licht and put them back, benched on it, and said the tefillah. When they told Reb Matl, he said the same word about Emunah. And he said, the mother's Emunah is beyond human imagination. I think it's a topic that's probably our most sacred trust to pass on. We need to deal with it maturely. We need to deal with it understanding. And we need to leave it for times when we have the ability to talk about the way you should. There are things you can talk offhandedly about. There are things that you need to think about. They have to be stories that are true. Baruch Hashem today, there are sfarim and books that were written where they did a lot of research to make sure the facts are true. They need to be emotionally true. You need to be able to emotionally grab onto it. There are things we don't have a musig of. And telling those things maybe do something to give us a sense of extraordinary gvura, but they don't give us a foothold in these things. It's our achrayus to choose, to select, to read, and to know what we're going to pass on. We need to pass on a message. The first thing is the reason to talk about it is to the nesias ol of Klal Yisrael. It's not only somebody in the present, it's the nesias ol of this generation to the generation that was and the generation that were. We need to live it. We need to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made one pledge that he'll never break, and that is that he won't let go of us. Sometimes it comes with tremendous embrace, and sometimes it comes with an iron grip. But it's the same idea. We need not to speak about what was wrong because we don't know. We don't understand why things were the way they were. And we don't have the nisyonos. We do need to focus on the future and understand that going forward, we have what to learn from. We need to find the time and the place and the moment to help our children, Talmidos, and so on, connect to that Avar, to connect to the Divrei Torah that were given by the Rosh Hashivas of that event. The Rosh Hashivas of that event were the people that lived through it, gave us Divrei Torah and the Havana of a person who was in that terrible Beis Medrash where HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught us the Parsha Yecheskel. And those Divrei Torah will give us a glimmer of light when saying that Tekufa.
I'm so excited because we're not going to stop. in that room.
Girl, as a reminder to Davin Minchah, and then to pack your supper in the room over there where I'm pointing, first room on your left as you exit over here. Lots of food, we're waiting. We have lots of food for you.
Thank you.